Today I'm doing something different. I'm going to be bringing in a special guest. And this is Dr. Jeff Wagaman. He is a licensed psychologist. He has a Christian counseling center in Olympia, Washington, along with his wife, Sue. And they have been in this practice for well over 30 years. And so I'll let him tell you a little bit about that. And so we are so excited that he's going to partner with us, because this week we're going to be talking about depression. And depression is a serious issue. It's a serious mental disorder. And what we want to do is we want to be able to dig into this and get some really great guidance, as long as biblical principles, seeing them come together. So let's join in on this interview with Dr. Jeff Wagaman. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Salty Pastor Podcast. I'm so glad that you are here today listening and joining the Salty crew. As you may know, we're trying to expand the Salty Pastor. It has been growing in a really incredible way. It's really expanded beyond the shores, that's a joke, of Idaho, since Idaho is a landlocked state, if you didn't know that. But along the shores of Idaho is expanding. So one of the things that you can do to help this ministry grow more than ever before is to go on over to the YouTube channel. Look up Salty Pastor and then like and subscribe. Even if you don't listen on the YouTube channel, that's okay, because by liking and subscribing, you are helping it grow, because it pushes it up in the algorithm. Also, if you would like to financially support the Salty Pastor, we love having your support. You can go to foothills.org, and then on the far right is a give button. You click on that tab, and then you can pick a gift to go directly to the Salty Pastor. So we are hoping and praying that God continues to use what we're doing here to expand the ministry. It's really exciting to have a special guest with us today. Jeff Wagaman from Olympia, Washington, is kind of an expert in this area. So, hey, Jeff, thanks for joining us here on the Salty Pastor today. Can you just tell us real quick about yourself and about your family so you can bring everybody up to speed?
Sure. I'll start with my family. I'm married to Sue, and she'll be coming over with me, and we'll be talking to everybody together. She's also a counselor, and we've been married this June, 45 years. Mm. So that's all. I'm impressed.
So that's cool.
And
yeah.
Then, we have six kids, two boys and four girls, and we have six grandkids. Wow. Two girls and four boys. And last week we just spent a week down in Phoenix with the grandkids, watching grandkids while my son and his wife went to Costa Rica. And that was a blast.
Wow.
And so I have found, I don't know if you have grandkids, but I have found that I really like being a granddad. It's been a lot of fun. It's way more fun than I thought of. So,
well, I'm really looking forward to that job. I hear it's the best job in the world.
It is surprising. I heard that too, and I didn't believe it until I got there. So that's been really, really nice. And four of my kids are married, and so we love their spouses and we enjoy them a ton as well. And just to kind of, three of my kids are in the mental health field as well. They're counselors. Mm-hmm. Two of them work for me. And then one of my daughters is a dietitian with a specialty in mental health. And then one of my son-in-laws is going to be a psychologist. So, wow. So it's kind of running in our family as well. And I'm a psychologist. I went I was a youth pastor for several years. And then they took a job where it was just a 1-year job as a pretend pretend pastor, because I don't have any training. Mm-hmm. And then I took the job while they looked for a real pastor. And then I needed a job, and somebody said, "Hey, you're good with kids. There's a school over here for juvenile delinquents that needs counselors. And so would you like to apply?" And I said, "Sure, I'll apply." And so I applied, and never in a million years would I think I'd end up being counselor. And so I had no clue. But what I found was that it really was my skill set, and I developed a passion for it. So since then, I did go back to youth pastoring for a little bit and then went back to counseling. And I said, this is my thing. And so I went back to grad school and became a psychologist, joined the military for 5 years, as a psychologist and during Desert Storm and all that. Mm. And then started my practice in 1994 and started Cascade Counseling. Here's my cup to prove it. And it's been great. It's been a total blessing. And we have, I think, about 20 employees now. And so we're really thrilled to do it. It's something I've always wanted to do since I started grad school. I wanted to kind of start a Christian counseling clinic, and there we are. We have it now. So very blessed and feel very honored to do it. So,
well, that's awesome. Yeah. So you've got a lot of experience, a lot of training. We're currently in a series titled Weeds in My Garden. And right. We're trying to have an honest conversation about, you know, mental health. And can you tell us real quick, some of the things that, you know, I mean, you've dealt with a lot of different things, but we think that since COVID happened, there's been an uptick, like in the last probably 4 or 5 years, of different types of mental health disorders and things that people are dealing with. In your experience, what have you seen and what are you recognizing as new trends?
Well, I think with COVID, a lot of anxiety has gone on, you know, where we're hearing all these terrible things, some of them accurate, some of them not accurate, you know, we're hearing all this stuff. And so we're just getting very fearful of each other. And, you know, and also when it started, we really didn't know what we were dealing with. Mm-hmm. And so people were very frightened. And so our normal life was totally changed, and where we didn't get around people, and we're social creatures and we're created to be social. And now we're being isolated and we're being distrustful of each other and we're stuck at home. Mm-hmm. And we're scared that we're going to die. And so there's a lot of fear, a lot of thinking, I think, that beliefs that this is going to kill us all. And so I had people that were incredibly scared to death and had misinformation, you know, like, for example, you know, and it was a big deal, but you know, people were dying from this, but mm-hmm. I remember having clients come in and I said, so what do you think your chances are of dying from this? And I remember one of my clients said, oh, I think 65-70%.
Oh my goodness.
And I go, well, it's actually like 1.5%. You know, and yeah. so now that's still 1.5%, but that's not 65-70%.
No.
And it's a little different than that. But there was a lot of, I'm going to get this, I'm going to die. And so people, I think there was a lot of fear. So we saw a lot of up in anxiety, up in depression, because I think also it's depressing to think that you're going to die and that you can't be around people. I remember when we first started this, we still were able to be open, but we had to work virtually.
Yeah.
And I'm working from home, seeing clients and talking to clients. And I remember for the first time, I started kind of going, wow, I was talking to my wife and go, I'm not enjoying this very much. And I go, I don't know what's going on. And then I had to think for it. And I go, oh, I'm not meeting with anybody. Yeah. I'm talking to them on the computer. I'm not meeting with them face to face. And I really enjoy meeting one-on-one. And so I had to realize, oh, that's what's going on. And I was able to get through that. But it was when we had to isolate because my wife had COVID, that was difficult. I found that hard to do and not be around people. And so I think that was hard for a lot of people. So I think we really saw anxiety, depression go up a lot, mostly.
Yeah, that's kind of in a pastoral perspective, that's what we saw a lot of. We really saw isolation as a catalyst for that. And kind of now that COVID was passing, is interesting that we haven't seen people like bouncing back like, you know, you would think. And so that's one of the reasons why we wanted to do this series, just to let people know what you're experiencing is real. These are real things. But there's an answer, you know, to a lot of these things. In particular, we're really curious. This week that you're going to be coming and sharing, we're focusing on depression. Now, I realize that, you know, anxiety and depression and other disorders, they're all kind of linked. I remember in my doctoral program, a therapist, a psychologist came in and he said, you know, pathogens usually travel in pairs, and they normally are in threes. So they kind of influence each other quite a bit. And so we're not trying to, you know, focus just uniquely on depression, because we realize it has many different partners, I guess, in the process. But kind of when you think about depression and as a Christian counseling practice, what biblical models do you tend to look at? What kind of characters in the scripture do you pull from that really help you help people when they're having to deal with and unravel the complexity of depression?
Yeah, depression is kind of commenting on a couple of things you said, that I think depression and anxiety often go together. They say on the emotional line that depression in it and anxiety are neighbors, and that some days I'll think about a certain thought, let's say, and it will be depressing. Let's say we're having financial problems. One day it may be a depressing thought financially. The next day it might be an anxious thought financially, and that, oh, I'm not going to have enough. And then the depressing thought might be, I'm never going to have enough, you know? Yeah. And so these kind of things, and they can just feed off each other, and you can have both. And I think the thing that I'm glad that we're talking about, getting to talk about depression, because anxiety is the biggest one, as you mentioned last week. Depression would be number two. But I think depression is more dangerous than anxiety, because people don't really kill themselves because they're anxious, but people kill themselves because they're depressed.
Wow.
And what we see is that suicide is one of those issues that is really tied, correlated with depression. Almost everybody who kills themselves or tries to kill themselves are depressed. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we see that. And that's one of the things we'll be talking about probably Saturday night, maybe touch on it a little bit Sunday. But there are some things that even as lay people, we can help with helping people assess suicide a little bit and help people who are suicidal. I know you had somebody talk about suicide. I would probably want to bounce on that a little bit and talk about that a little further. But I think depression is a very complicated, difficult, multifaceted condition. And there's obviously mental components, because it's mainly mental. I mean, that's why we're calling it mental health. We're dealing with mental health. Yeah. But there are physical components for sure, and there are spiritual components for sure. And that what I also find is that when we're treating it, that even though it's mainly mental, some of the physical things we can do can be really help the depression. Mm-hmm. And also some of the spiritual things we do can really help depression. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a full person kind of disorder, where you can use everything, spiritual, mental, physical, to help fight this condition. Mm. And it's a tough condition. You know, yeah. Once we kind of move into depression, what's weird about depression is once we move into it, it kind of develops a shell around it. Mm. And it only takes about 2 weeks for this to happen. So if I have an event, let's say, or we have an event that happens that's significant, and I think about that event and dwell on that event in a very negative way, mm-hmm. I can move into this depression. And now I'm kind of, the shell kind of forms. I don't know why this happens. I don't know if it's a protective reason that this happens to help us from getting worse or whatever. But the shell develops where now I'm kind of stuck in this depression. Mm. And I just can't bounce out of it. And so all those tools that we're talking about, or all those areas that we're talking about, those can help us get out of it. But it's a process. It's a difficult process.
Well, one thing I wanted to kind of dig into a little bit, I didn't give you a heads up on this one, so you'll have to shoot from the hip, but you're brilliant and well-experienced, so this is no problem for you. But grief, you know, how does grief relate to depression? And because sometimes when you lose somebody very close to you. And the reason I ask this question is because in the last 9 months, we've probably had anywhere from 7 to 2 brand new widows in our church.
Right.
And so I've done a lot of funerals and things. And I just, it's just really sensitized me to the issue of grief. So can you talk a little bit about grief and depression and how they're linked?
Okay. The thing with grief is obviously, usually when we're talking about grief, we're talking about we've lost somebody through death. And now we can't grieve at the same point, you know, maybe losing a loved one through divorce or something along that line. But oftentimes we're talking about losing somebody permanently, like a spouse, until we see them in heaven, hopefully, you know. So, but that grief looks like depression. And it has all the symptoms of depression, pretty much, except most of the time we don't see the suicide one. Because now people may feel like, oh, I wish I was gone so I could be with my loved one. But that's a very passive, not an active suicide. I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things we don't see with grief that we can see with depression. But it looks the same. So sometimes we get them confused and think they're the same, but they really are very different. And so grief is losing something, and it's a very natural process to loss. And so the treatment for grief is very different from the treatment for depression. And so in grief, what we do is what we want to do is really process and talk a lot about the person, about our relationship, and think about it and process it through. Excuse me. I didn't think I would start coughing here. So when we have somebody who's grieving, a lot of times what we want to do is really is be alongside them and ask them to talk about their loved one and tell me, I want to get to know your loved one. I want to get to know your husband or your wife and tell me more about them. And that process of talking, maybe it's writing, journaling, maybe it's creating a book of pictures and stories and things like that. It can be a lot of these different things, but that process of really walking it through is the process that really helps people and they get through it. Naturally, the thing that hurts people from grieving is stuffing it. That they the sadness of it, and they stuff it, and they don't want to think about it. And they don't think about it. They will then that grief will just go on and on and on and on. Even though talking about it, bringing it up, there's tears, there's crying, there's upset. We work it through. I had the privilege.
But depression, you treat it differently than grief then. I mean, if someone is depressed, do you avoid the catalysts that are bringing it up? Or what's your treatment plan for people in depression?
Yeah, the treatment plan for depression is quite a bit different, and it's a long thing. But I'm going to talk about grief just a little more.
Oh, okay. So sorry.
Just a little bit more on grief.
I'm zooming ahead. I apologize.
I'm sorry. I had a client of mine who lost his wife. He was young, 28 years old, and he didn't grieve. He stuffed it. He was a cowboy kind of guy, rough and tough, and he just thought he should focus on it. He got remarried, had a kid, and 20 years later, he comes in to see me, and he's feeling miserable, and he doesn't know why, and we're talking, and as we're discussing, find out that he has this wife that died, and blah, 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 and we start realizing that, oh, you've never grieved.
Wow.
You're just holding on to this. And so for a couple of years, at least, we started talking about his wife every session, ex-wife, and went through the whole process of her having cancer and dying and that whole process and just the pain of it and the torture of it. And it was very painful. And he processed that grief. Well, he wrote a book at the end of it. And I was privileged to get to do the foreword of the book, and it's called Cowboys Don't Cry.
Oh, wow.
And so it's all not confidential anymore, so I can talk about it. But it was, I think, a great example of the process of grief and how we can stop it because it's painful, especially for guys. I think we want to have that emotion and all that stuff, so we don't do that process. But if we do it, we will heal from it and we can move on. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that it's that we don't cry maybe sometime when we talk about it, because it is sad. We love that person, but we aren't haunted. We're living life now in the present We aren't haunted by the past. So it's a process, but it's very different than grief, excuse me, depression. And depression, oftentimes, we argue with their thinking. We are fighting their depression. We aren't fighting grief. We're going with grief.
Yeah.
You're right. It is sad that your spouse died. And I want you to tell me about it. And let's talk about it. And we're understanding that it was terrible and awful. And it was very difficult to go through. And there were some really tough things. We're going with it. Where depression, it's a different ballgame. We're oftentimes looking at it and trying to challenge some of the thinking that goes with it. And that kind of process is very different. And not always, you know, as fun for the person, because we're arguing with them. We're challenging them on some of their thinking. And it's usually there's a lot of irrational thinking that goes with depression, almost always.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That reminds me of what Paul told the Corinthians, the 2 Corinthians. He says, you know, though our weapons of warfare are not of flesh and blood, but they're divinely inspired for the destruction of fortresses. And he goes on to say, so we're taking captive every thought to the obedience of Christ. And in my ministry over the years, what I've always thought is the fortress that he's talking about is the irrational things that we build as structures. I mean, these things are tangible. They are solid, but irrational, and they become a fortress inside of either our mind or our soul. You know, they just, we wrap so much of ourselves around them. And so we have to take captive these irrational things to the obedience of Christ. And that is a little bit of a tug of war. And do you feel that you experience that when you're confronting depression?
Oh, for sure. And I think that it's looking at, because oftentimes when we look at depression, we're looking at that for most of us, you know, and that would be where I would talk about most of us, because there's biological components for this as well.
Yes.
But and that can be even for most of us, but I mean, that's in that camp. But for a lot of us, the thing that kind of starts this ball rolling is we go through something. There's some activating event that happens. Mm. We lose a job. We have something traumatic happen. Mm-hmm. And we experience that, and then we think about it. Mm-hmm. And the thinking about it can stir up just thoughts like, I lost my job, I'll never get hired again, nobody will want to work with me, my wife left me, nobody will ever want to be with me again, I'm such a loser. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thinking. And then But we might also have beliefs that are deeper than that thought created from that. But the beliefs might be thoughts I've had for years, that I'm not worthy, that I don't measure up, that nobody loves me, that everybody hates me, that I am worthless, that I'm not capable, that I have these beliefs that get triggered also by that event. And so we get this compound of thoughts and beliefs that lead us to depression. Mm. So when we're fighting depression, we aren't really fighting the event. The event's important, but what's more important is what it taught us. Mm. And some of the things that it taught us are not accurate. And so we're trying to get to accurate. And when we get to accurate, oftentimes what we're finding is that it's less depressing. Mm-hmm. It's not as depressing. It still might be depressing. Sometimes it's not depressing at all, but sometimes it still can be sad, but it's not as bad as what they were thinking. And then we have a different mood that comes from it. And that process, that I'm going to talk about that more Saturday, probably a little bit Sunday.
Okay.
But that process is a lot of what we do in therapy, is looking at people's thoughts and challenging and working with them. And it sounds easier than it is, you know, because most of us aren't aware of what we're thinking. We're a little more aware of what we're feeling. Yeah. But oftentimes we go, I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling anxious. Why? What's going on? What are you thinking? I have no clue what I'm thinking. Yeah. I just know I'm anxious. And that, because a lot of times that thought is gone. That thought has come by, created the mood, and it's gone. And so we're trying to go, well, let's pull back a little bit. What went on 5 minutes ago? what happened, and then we can kind of get to the thought, and then we can evaluate that thought and work on it.
That's really insightful, because one of the catchphrases that I talk about on The Salty Pastor a lot is that we rarely think about how we think. You know, we rarely actually think about, well, how have I been trained to think about things? Why do I think in these ways? And so we tend not to do that. And that's why being in the scripture on a regular basis is important, which is why prayer is important. You know, I tell people, you know, praying is not about getting God to do stuff for you. Prayer is time with God so that you can align your thinking with his truth. And that fights some of these things. And then I'd like you to comment on this, because you said this earlier that I thought was really, really resonated with me, as you said, well, there's an event, and then we think about the event, and then that pulls up beliefs that have been there a really long time. And something that I tell people in our church all the time is I say, what you believe is one of the most important things about you. So, really think about what you believe and evaluate what you believe, because whether you know it or not, it drives your thinking, and your thinking drives your decisions, and then your situations and circumstances and experiences are usually how you feel, right? And then that triggers what you think, the process of thinking, and that dredges up your beliefs. I just thought, wow, you said it so much more eloquently than I did, but it...
I agree, and that, not what that was more eloquent, but agree with what you're saying, is that that our we go towards our most powerful thoughts. Whatever our most powerful beliefs are, we go towards those. And like as the Bible says, as a man thinks, so he is.
Yeah.
So as we think about these beliefs and we go towards that, those beliefs impact us significantly. And when we have faulty beliefs about ourselves, it impacts us physically, emotionally, spiritually. And so these faulty beliefs are creating problems for us big time. So I think that part of therapy is we're working on trying to get people to think in a healthy manner, an accurate manner, and associated with the truth of the word. Mm-hmm. Because the one of the things I've learned over the last 30 years in private practice and being a psychologist is that, you know, the Bible is truth, and that the principles of the Bible are true. And if we live by those principles, our life is better mm-hmm. than if we don't. Now, just because we live by those principles, we may still be depressed, because depression is a mental thing more than a spiritual thing. But in general, these spiritual principles are the way to live our life. And when we get out of this depression, they're a great way to stay out of the depression and to help us live a meaningful, great life. So I can expand on that, because I know we had a question at one point on this, but one of the things I've seen is that in my years of being a psychologist is that the principles, I guess the truth of the Bible is becoming, I guess, supported by psychology, and the research is coming out in psychology.
Yes.
Where I think in psychology, they would never say this necessarily, but what I'm seeing is there's some great research coming out that's truth, that is just saying what the Bible said 2,000 to 4,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's a couple studies that came out that I really loved. And one of them was a big study on happiness. And they were looking at happiness and trying to see, okay, what makes people happy? Mm-hmm. And they looked over and over and over again, and they looked at everything. They looked at, okay, well, we think what makes people happy is drugs and alcohol and partying and all that stuff. Well, that didn't make really people happy. And then they looked at money, and they thought, okay, that makes people happy. Well, it does to a little degree, but doesn't make people really happy. It makes them a little bit happy as long as they're not in poverty and as long as they can buy some things. But beyond that, it didn't make them happy. Mm-hmm. And then they looked at everything they could think, sex, all that stuff, and they found that, nope, that doesn't do it either. And doing all these things that the world and society is telling us makes it happy. And this was done by an atheist. And he concluded at the end, he said, okay, here's the conclusion after looking at everything. The happiest people in the world love God and love others.
Yeah.
And he goes, I have no idea why this is true, because we found it. You aren't happy when you believe a lie. And so, so here we are believing this lie that there's a God. And so these people are really the happiest people in the world. And he never could conclude that maybe it's true, but that we, well, and of course, you know that Jesus said this, right? that the word is boiled down to loving God and loving others. And we just didn't know that he was also saying, and by the way, this is the way to be happy as well, is to love God and love others. And then the third thing he found was that if you had some purpose in life, that was the third thing.
Yeah.
Now, I listened to your sermon this morning on anxiety. And at the beginning of it, you said, we're here to help you connect with God mm-hmm. and connect with others mm-hmm. and find a purpose. And what research is saying is that those three things, if you can have those three things in life, you're going to be happier than anybody. And so I think that these spiritual truths are the way to live our life.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that came out recently was a big study done on sex. And as you know, in this world that we're in today, everything's about sex.
Everything.
And so they looked at everything on sex, and they basically boiled it down to that the happiest people sexually are heterosexual couples who were exclusive their whole life and were exclusive when they first met and everything. And so it's like, so when Jesus told us to, and God has told us to not have premarital sex, he wasn't trying to rip us off.
Right.
He was trying to create a really good situation for us. So everything I've found in my life as a therapist and psychologist has been that you follow the word and you're going to be better off emotionally,
yep,
spiritually, probably physically, than if you didn't. And so, yeah, I think that's the way to live.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to depression, it can be a little more than that. There's more than that, because they're depressed. They're in the shell of a problem that we need to get them out of.
Yeah.
And that takes some different techniques and tools to help them get through it.
Well, that's exciting. Well, we're going to stop here for today. And then on Thursday, we're going to pick up a little bit more. We're so glad that Jeff is with us talking about depression from Cascade Counseling Center in Olympia, Washington. It's a tremendous practice there. So we just want to say thank you for being here with us today. And we're going to zoom on and pick up right where we left off on Thursday. So blessings to all of you, Salty Crew.
Thanks, Dave.